Okay, our next speaker is Mark Bellmare. He's an assistant professor of public policy at Duke University. He received his BSc and MSc from the University of Montreal in economics, and he received his PhD from Cornell University in applied economics. Mark's title of his presentation is Rising Food Prices and Food Price Volatility. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you to the organizers of the conference for inviting me to talk here. As a native Montrealer, it's very nice to be back. It's especially nice to be back in this room, where in June of 1993 was the last time I was in this room for my senior prom. So I find it extremely ironic that I'm here talking in the same room where we had dinner for our prom in 93. Okay. The introduction that I was about to give you, most of you are familiar with this. This is an audience of specialists or people who have a strong interest in food policy and global food policy. In the 22 years since the FAO has been recording its food price index, we hit a high in February of 2011. Now, whether that, you know, that coincided with the Arab Spring, and the claim that I make in my own research agenda, contra what Robert was telling us earlier, is that there's actually a causal relationship flowing from food prices to social unrest. And I'll show you some empirical results. I'll show you some time series graphs. It's not the sole cause of social unrest, and it's not the only cause. It's one of those causes, and I'll show you why. But I'll show you also the causal estimates as far as we can identify a causal relationship, statistically speaking. Food prices are still very high. They're not as high as they were back in 2011, but they're pretty high. The FAO food price index is at 216 right now. And the reason why I favor the FAO's food price index, right? Robert said, what price? Domestic prices are to be favored. Sure, absolutely. If I had domestic prices, if I had prices at each market level and I could identify social unrest associated to each local market, that's what I'd be using. But there's a trade-off between trying to make a more general statement and having, if I use domestic prices at a market level, I probably won't have enough kind of disturbances locally to study. Whereas if I use global food prices like the FAO's food price index, I'll also show you some IMF commodity prices later on, I actually capture enough disturbances worldwide that I can compare then with those food prices. So one distinction I've been trying to make and insist upon in my work, and Robert said, one of the luxuries of academics is that we can insist on analytical clarity. And I will insist strongly today on the analytical distinction between high food prices, food price inflation, and food price volatility. These two things are not the same thing. And that's a distinction I've been insisting on in my own work. So I've written a number of things in recent years on food policy, but always making the distinction between rising food prices. Stuff is expensive. And food price volatility. We don't know which way prices are going to go in the next month, in the next year, in the next quarter. In statistical terms, rising food prices refers to increases in the mean of the food price distribution. Food price volatility refers to the standard deviation, the variance of the food price distribution. Most of you in this room have at some point taken a statistics course where you've been introduced to the difference between the mean and the variance of some random variable. I want to insist further upon that distinction by showing you that the welfare impacts of high food prices are not the same as the welfare impacts of uncertain or volatile food prices. To kind of just solidify the distinction between volatility and high food prices, volatility, yeah, it encompasses jumps in food prices upward, but it also encompasses jumps downwards or drops, unexpected drops in food prices. So in short, although rising food prices harm net buyers, urban households, resource-poor rural households of food, and benefit net sellers of food, resource-rich rural households, the presence of an increase in food price volatility actually tends to harm net sellers considerably more than it does net buyers, who can go so far as actually benefit from it. So if you go back to it, there's an old literature in microeconomic theory where some microeconomists in 1944 said, holy smokes, in a QJE article said, consumers actually like price volatility. They actually like price uncertainty. That was a theoretical result for a very long time, and in recent years there's been some empirical work that said, if you look at it, yes, consumers can actually benefit from price uncertainty, and I'll get to the reasons why eventually. So let's get our hands dirty with some data. Let me show you some time series. Robert has already shown you some of it, but let me show you a little bit more of those. food price levels and social unrest between 1990 and 2011. The time frame is guided by the fact that that's when the FAO started recording data back in January 1990. The blue line is all food-related social unrest in the LexisNexis database. So that includes demonstrations, right? It's not just food riots. It includes mobs. It includes strikes. So every kind of news story that was in there that talked about food and some kind of social disturbance is recorded in there. And so that's the FAO's food price index. Let's look at the IMF maize price index. And you can see that the two spikes coincide. They did coincide in the FAO, but it was a little bit more muted. If you look at maize prices, they do coincide here. If you look at rice price, you get that huge spike in 2008, in the spring of 2008. And if you look at soybean even, you get that same thing. And likewise, wheat. You get the kind of these correlation between these price spikes. If you actually, right, so this isn't controlling for anything. It's purely showing you two variables moving together. And what if we actually do the empirical work of running a regression on this, right? This red bracketed stuff shows you that there's a positive relationship and statistically significant relationship between the level of food prices, the food price index, and historical volatility over the past 3 months. Except if you look closely, the volatility has a negative impact on social unrest, whereas high food prices have a positive impact on social unrest. In other words, high food prices seem to be associated with higher levels of disturbances, of discontent, whereas volatility has the opposite effect. We can't quite say that this is causal here, right? This is a regression. It controls for some stuff, but it doesn't isolate a causal relationship. I'm just showing you the second bracket, cereals, same story. What if I actually do the work of kind of teasing out the causal relationship from the data, from the correlation? I'm not going to get into the finer details of instrumental variables analysis. If you know what that is, you know exactly what I'm doing. If you don't know, you'll have to take my word for it that this is a statistical method that allows to kind of quasi-experimentalize the research design and really try to isolate the causal relationship flowing from food prices to social unrest. Here again, right, the relationship is strengthened, so this top coefficient shows that there appears to be a causal relationship from high food prices to social unrest. Likewise, the volatility finding remains, though this one can't be argued to be causal. This one is probably just a correlation. You can read some causality into it. We don't know. We don't have the tools as of yet to tell whether that's actually, whether volatility causes decreases in social unrest. These results actually suggest that, first, that rising food prices cause food riots. Perhaps more importantly for our purposes, these results show that food price volatility is negatively associated with social unrest. Again, this can't be argued to be a causal relationship. On the basis of some preliminary findings from that paper, a co-author and I published the following piece, following popular press piece during the summer of 2011. As you can imagine, this won us many, many friends in the policymaker community, given this kind of shocking title that we had chosen. We fully brought that upon ourselves, by the way. The foreign affairs people had chosen a title, and then we said, no, you know what? This isn't actually that great. Let's take a different title. So this was entirely our own doing. Let's look quickly at some micro-level evidence. The story I've just told you is a global story. FAO food prices, social unrest worldwide. In another paper with Chris Barrett and David Just, we studied the impacts of food price volatility in rural Ethiopia. Let me skip over the technical details to just kind of give you what I find to be the key takeaway. This plots the relationship between household willingness to pay to stabilize prices. In other words, a measure of the welfare loss that is incurred by price uncertainty, price volatility. And here this is for the top seven commodities in longitudinal data for rural households in Ethiopia. The data set is publicly available on the IFPRI website, in case you're interested. And as you can see from the red line, right, which plots income against willingness to pay to stabilize prices, the wealthier people get in rural Ethiopia, the more they seem to be willing to pay to stabilize prices, the more they seem to be hurt by food price volatility. And the lower income households are the ones who would be willing to pay the least, right, as a proportion of income, not as a full dollar amount. So this controls for how wealthy you are or how wealthy you aren't really in rural Ethiopia to begin with. So though everyone appears to be significantly harmed by food price volatility, there's an unexpected, if you believe most commentators, that is, relationship between household income and the welfare loss due to price volatility. Okay, I'm not going to get into the technical. I was given the three-minute warning about 3 minutes ago. I've tried to insist on the fundamental differences between rising food prices and food price volatility, both conceptual and empirical. I've shown you some empirical results showing that it is rising food prices, 1 minute, thank you, that cause social unrest and not food price volatility. Likewise, I have shown you empirical results suggesting that the welfare loss due to food price volatility actually gets worse as rural households get wealthier, as they become larger producers or more likely to be a net seller. The first policy implication is that if we want to avoid food riots or social unrest, we should probably work toward curbing the level of food prices instead of the volatility. In addition, it appears that the focus on price volatility is probably misguided at this point. At best, food price volatility seems to reduce the incidence of social unrest due to food prices. At worst, it mostly harms wealthier rural households, people who can hedge better than the poorer households in sub-Saharan Africa. Many in the policy world don't seem to be aware of that distinction. So let me just read what's written on there. The crux of the food price challenge is about price volatility rather than high prices per se. It is the rapid and unpredictable changes in food prices that wreak havoc on markets, politics, and social stability. That's not just anyone, right? That's from the Brookings Institution, which is actually a very serious think tank in Washington, D.C. And this seems to be purely out of, I don't know, probably opinion or something. This is not rooted in actual empirical analysis. Knowing where to best spend your $8 in this era of budget austerity is extremely important. Should we work towards curbing food prices, or the food price inflation, or food price volatility? One of the only true bipartisan areas of agreement in Washington is about the need to cut aid budgets. So to this session's theme question, can high food prices and volatility be managed? I answer, yes, but high food prices and food price volatility are different problems, which actually require different policy instruments. Thank you very much.